You say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another chance.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and we have done it again. Another great show. Holy cow, all the way from Cincinnati, Ohio. His name is Patrick Burke. The book is entitled The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. I am going to tell you something. Folks, I have read this book. By the way, this is one of those books that is get right in your face and to the point book, all right? If you think that you're going to have to wade through hundreds upon hundreds of pages to get to the point, no, that's not what Patrick does. What Patrick does is he gets right to the point, and that's what this book is. This book is outstanding. He talks about the 10 biggest business mistakes. I'm going to tell you something. I'm an entrepreneur, and many of you who listen to the show all over the world are entrepreneurs. Many of you run your own business, or you're CEOs, or you're CFOs, or you're some sort of C-suite. You've got your own thing going, or you're in charge of your own thing. Let me tell you something that this book has. It has something for everyone, right? It has something about hiring. It has something about bringing on partners. It has something about when to sell, when not to sell. It has something even if you're starting out. Right? It has something about what should you choose as a business? Or does the business choose you? Wait for it, because Patrick's going to help you there, all right? Listen, the book is outstanding. He's even better. I'm just telling you, he is. He's got just a wealth of experience. But before we get to him, let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life. Look, folks, we are four-part people. We are physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual people. And by the way, business folks, you know that that's true. You know that there are times when you're exhausted and tired, your physical part. You know that you're mentally challenged, that you're, of course, your brain part, your mental part. You're emotionally challenged, that's the emotional part. And then there's things that you can't explain that happen, but that you just got to have faith and believe that it's going to happen. That's the spiritual part, right? So we interviewed a lot of special operations forces guys on this show. And one of the things that they have always said is that if you're not growing, you're dying. And if you're not constantly working on yourself, you're actually dying. And actually, it's kind of interesting because Patrick actually said something very similar about business. That if you don't have growth, you don't stay the same. People will pass you by. It's kind of interesting. We're going to find out about that too when we talk with him. But the truth is, physically, if we were to look at it, we're going to have you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being my training and what I'm doing in these areas is not very good, or 10, it's great. It doesn't get any better, right? So here's how we do this. So physically, I want you to go out there, everybody out there, I want you to evaluate yourself like this. If you were to evaluate yourself on your exercise, eating right, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, and all the things that entails, how would you rate how well you're doing that over the course of the last 7 days? Right? And that's because there's going to be a number, scale 1 to 10, right? 5 being average. By the way, whatever your number is, don't panic, right? Because this isn't about chastising you for your number. This is about finding your number, and then what can you do to change it to move up? That's what this is about. If you're 3.5 or you're 4, I want to just get you to a 4 or 4.5. I don't need you to get to a 10. I just need you to make a change. If you say to me, well, I'm not getting enough sleep. Why? Right? Do you need to get up or do you need to go to bed earlier? Are you getting up too early? Because that's possible. Sometimes we get up way too early, right? Or is there stress in your life that's keeping you from getting enough sleep? What's stopping you from getting enough water? Right? There's little things we can do. Right? We can stop, we can stop putting our hands in the bag of chips. That can help. That might maybe be a start. All right, so you got your first number. Second number is the mental number. Look, we have two halves of the brain. We're right brain, left brain. Right brain's creative, left brain's logical. And as we say in psychology, we have to exercise both halves of that brain. We can't be just dominant in one or the other, because then what happens is we're not really at our best self. So what are you doing to exercise your mental part of your life? Your creativity as well as your logic center, right? You have to bring both of those together. What's a great way to do that? It's read a book. I don't know. This is a great book to read. I would read the 10 biggest business mistakes. It's available on Amazon. bookstores everywhere. You can find it where you want to find it. So that'd be great. But, you know, you could take up an instrument and you could learn a foreign language. You can do a variety of things to enhance your mental side of your game. The one thing I don't want you to do is sit on a couch and let things come at you and be a mental loafer. Okay? Be an active participant in your mental growth. By the way, so what would you give yourself on the scale of 1 to 10? Right? So you got two numbers. Third number is emotional. And emotionally, we look at two things. You know, we talk about emotional quotients and intelligence, but really what we're looking at here is how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? And then the second is how well are you able to tap into the emotions and understand them when you're with other people? Right? And the first one, you may say, well, I'm not real good. And the second one say, I'm really good at understanding the emotions of others. Because that really requires active listening, right? Which actually we could all improve, right? And the truth of the matter is, you could check yourself real quick when you were driving in traffic today. How did you do when that person cut you off? How did you do in the grocery line when you were in a hurry? How did you do because you were exhausted and tired and one more thing happened? How did you do emotionally, right? So on a scale of 1 to 10, what would be your number? And then finally, the fourth area is the spiritual area. And you know, a lot of people say, I'm not spiritual, but we're all spiritual because we all have faith in something. We all believe in something. We all hope for something. And I know that hope is not a strategy. But I'm going to tell you something. I was a farmhand for a number of years before I went into business. And I got to tell you something. There are things that are outside of your control. And sometimes faith and hope is the only thing we had in order to make the farm work. And we believed. Right? We had to trust that everything that we did was going to work. We had to believe that when we planted the seed, that the seed would work. And you know, the other part of it is what brings you back to center? What brings you back to that peace that you can find in the midst of chaos? Is it God? Is it nature? Is it yoga? Is it something else? And then you have to ask yourself, how's that working for you? And then what do you need to do to change it? Right? And then, you know, that's your fourth number. And so these four numbers are like the legs of a chair. If the legs of the chair are uneven, that's bad for your posture. And you can't really cannot go very long that way. And the second thing is if the legs of the chair are too low, you know, the truth of the matter is you can't eat at the table when the legs are too low. But you know what? I have someone whose legs are all even and they're at the right height. His name is Patrick Burke. He is the managing partner of Burke and Schindler Wealth Management. Pat has a passion for helping entrepreneurs start, grow, manage, and build valuable businesses. He has advised more than 200 successful startups. Pat is a recognized expert across multiple disciplines, including mergers and acquisitions, business financing, and deal structuring. Pat has also authored 3 business books and 1 children's book. How about that? Pat graduated cum laude from the University of Dayton with a Bachelor's of Science degree in accounting and earned a law degree from the University of Cincinnati College of Law. He currently serves on the board of directors for SMS Holdings, a real estate services company based in Nashville, Tennessee. He also serves as board chair for Cincinnati-based UASI, a medical information company. Pat maintains a Series 7 and Series 66 securities licenses. Pat resides in Cincinnati, Ohio with his wife, Mary Jo, and he has 3 grown children, and he works with his son, Jake, at Burke & Schindler. In his spare time, he enjoys swimming, cycling, playing the drums, and spending time with his grandchildren. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time, Patrick Burke. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you, Jay. That made my life sound much more interesting than it really is, I think. but I appreciate the intro.
Well, you're absolutely welcome, and you are worth it. I love the book. The book is fantastic. So let's just dig right into this. Mistake number one. Buy or start the wrong business. And I think it's really interesting that we start there because I think it's really important that we start there because sometimes I don't know if, you know, we panic. Maybe we're in a job we don't like and we feel like we got to do something else. So maybe we want to do something on our own. Sometimes we want to buy into a franchise. Sometimes we want to try to do our own thing. But so often, isn't it true that we can actually get into the wrong thing when we're in a bad place?
Clearly, as I mentioned in the book, you know, you don't go to the grocery store when you're hungry. You're going to end up with a cart full of Twinkies, right? So you want to go to a quiet place in your house wherever you can contemplate and think about what it is. What is it that I'm good at? What is it that I think I can add value to over a long-term basis? And that could be many different things. And I think so many people, when it comes time to start or buy a business, they rely on, you know, serendipity. Oh, well, my neighbor's cousin has a, you know, fill in the blank. It's a lawnmower repair shop and distributorship, and I think I want to buy that. And it's like, well, okay, what value do you add to that? And if it's like, well, nothing except money, and I, you know, it's close to me, it's only across town, and so, you know, I hate my job, so I'm going to buy that. And that's, unfortunately, that sounds sort of wistful, but that's kind of what happens a lot of the time.
So you talk about that many small businesses are personality cults. You say there's nothing wrong with that, but that the cult is not sustainable. Talk about what you mean by that.
I think it, particularly if it's a business that someone, they did find their true direction, right? Their new direction, perhaps. And they're particularly good at, let's say, I'm thinking of a client who was a very creative guy, who was a photographer, a cinematographer, and he created a business around doing corporate entertainment. And, you know, it was very successful in the beginning, you know, as he had just a couple clients and every client knew who he was. And as he grew and not every client knew who he was and not every show could he actually manage and produce, the quality started to drop off and he lost some of his bigger accounts. And so what he was relying on was a personality cult. You know, Tim was a really dynamic guy, but his second in command wasn't dynamic. She was very studious, and she was somebody who was good at the technical aspect, but she wasn't a leader. So instead of having processes and metrics, it was sort of, hey, follow me, I'll lead you in the correct direction. But there was really no techniques for the next person to do that. And as a result, there was some fits and starts. He finally did find some people to help him grow, but it was, you know, it was a jump ball there at the beginning.
You talk about that you should, when you go into business, we should assess our strengths and weaknesses. And you actually have 10 threshold questions that are really, that you feel are really important that you should consider before you get into any sort of an entrepreneurial or business situation. One of those is, can you live with the uncertainty associated with running your own business? Risk is important.
I tell you what, some people can't do it. You know, and I've had business buyers down to the 2-yard line, you know, with a first and goal at the 2-inch line, and they just couldn't put it over because it was, at the end of the day, they wanted some sort of a guarantee. Generally, it's, I insist the owner stay on for, let's say, 3 years. Well, the owner's going to stay on for 3 years. They might as well hold on to the business. You can't do that. Or I'm going to insist that the owner take a note back and it's going to be completely contingent on future results. Well, you didn't shift the risk from the old owner to you, so that nobody's going to take that deal. So you just have to know yourself. And I think that's kind of the time when your examination of your conscience will yield whether or not you can do this. And unfortunately, people don't always do it at the right time. They may have spent a lot of money on lawyers and accountants and going through diligence, and all of a sudden they get down to the end. It's like, hey, they just can't pull the trigger. And I've seen it several times.
Another question you ask if you have what it takes to be an entrepreneur, and I thought this was an interesting question. You ask, what's your relationship with your money?
You know, I look at it two ways. So some people, you know, their investments and their money are like a baseball card collection. You know, they have it in the shoebox up in their closet, and occasionally they pull it out and look at it, and they're excited about the Mantle rookie card or whatever. But they don't see it as a means to anything else. It's a cushion, not a lever. And if that's how you look at your money, if it's a cushion and not a lever, then it's not going to be very easy for you to enter the business world as a business owner, because you have to be ready up front to realize you're going to be signing personally, most likely on any kind of a note or bank loan. And of course, that money is required for everything. Much better a bank loan than a partner, which I also address in the book. But you know, that's there are certain kind of people to whom money is just that. It's something to be, you know, it's kind of like Scrooge McDuck. You know, they want it. They want to have a giant vat of gold doubloons and look at it each night. So that's not going to work.
I found that really interesting because I've never actually heard when people talk about, you know, what it takes to be an entrepreneur. Anybody ever asked the question, what's your relationship with your money? And I thought that was a really great question. You know, I thought this other one was something that we kind of take for granted, but evidently it's not something I should be taking for granted. And that is, are you competitive? The importance of competition, being a competitive person, is extremely important, isn't it?
Well, I always tell people there's somebody within 10 miles of you with the same idea. The question, that's not a question, that's a fact, right?
Right.
The question is, are you going to work harder than him or her? And if you're not, then they're going to eat your lunch. And if you do, you'll eat theirs. So that's just the basics of business. And the idea that, hey, a new idea wins out, just even if it's great, you know, you have to pursue it. I hate to keep using football analogies, but you know, you're down by 10 in the fourth quarter, right? And you got the ball and you got to move it.
Well, you should be using football analogies. University of Cincinnati is playing pretty good ball.
Yeah,
my friend.
They sure are. And so are the Bengals. So what's the embarrassment of riches.
What the heck is going on? The only thing that you're missing is the Reds in the World Series. I don't know.
A few more years for that, I think. We've had a few here.
Yeah, no, you've had a few here. I wore number 5.
Okay. There you go. Johnny Bench.
I did. I wore number 5 as a catcher playing baseball. So I wore that number. And so I'm a huge Johnny Bench fan. The last one I'm going to ask in this set is, do you have a skill that adds real value to your new business? What might that look like?
I always look at business, back, you had a 4-legged chair, I got a 3-legged stool, and the 3-legged stool is, you know, every business is production in some fashion, whether it's a service or a product, there's administration, and there's sales. And I guess my position would be, hey, if you're particularly adept at administration, that may not win the day in a business, right? Generally, I found successful entrepreneurs, whether they started the business or bought the business, are particularly skilled at sales or production. And so you just have to realize where you stand. Now, I guess my one caveat there would be, if you're really good at following the recipe book, it really, you know, franchises, you know, the whole idea of creating a valuable business is having, you know, a sustainable advantage. And the franchisor, that's what they work on nonstop every day, is how do we make this business sustainable? And if you can follow their cookbook, and be, you know, religious about doing it, then I think you can be successful as an administrator. But absent the franchise model, I think you're really better off in sales and production or both.
You make a statement, you have a subtitle in this chapter called Defog Your Mirror, and you quote a statistic here that says only about 20% of businesses fail because they're out-competed. Twice that number fail because there isn't enough demand for the product or service. Are we disillusioned?
Well, I always think about, you know, taking on a new business. It's like William Shatner, you know, in The Enterprise. You know, go where no man has gone before. I mean, The Enterprise can get a lot of places, but it uses a lot of fuel, and you really don't want to be in that posture. You know, you want to go where somebody else has been, most likely. And just try to do it a little bit better. You know, creating, I read a statistic in the last couple of weeks. This is stunning. And I didn't know it when I wrote the book. I would have put it in there. But 90% of first-time businesses fail. 90% of businesses you acquire are successful.
Interesting.
So when you look at those statistics and you think about, you know, I think people sort of think they have invented the better mousetrap and we're going to capture this new market, it's like, you know, think twice about that. I mean, there's, you know, for every Tesla, there's somebody that didn't quite make it, right?
So right.
Be careful.
That's an interesting stat. I've never seen that statistic before.
Yeah, no, I'll send you the book that I got it out of.
Okay, that'd be awesome. Because that's really, really interesting to me. You know, you talk about, in chapter 2, matter of fact, you know what, let's do this. before we get to mistake number two, let's do this. You know what? You're listening to Patrick Burke and the 10 biggest business mistakes right here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, two sponsors. One, Epic Physical Therapy. They're my physical therapist. I love them. They work with people who are injured. They work with professional athletes. They also work with people who just want to move and feel better. Listen, they really do treat you as an individual. It's not a cookie cutter recipe. They understand that they got to treat the whole body as a functional whole, not just a symptom or the injury. So when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. It's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, for over 35 years, she's been at the top of real estate game. The reason she could do that is because she understands that the relationship is the absolute most important aspect of the real estate transaction. She understands the business, getting you the highest price and as a seller and negotiating the terms and everything that comes with the business of real estate. But it really is about the relationship is at the end of the day. So you know what? Here's the deal. When you're ready to sell or buy your home, start with Linda Kraft at Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction. We're with Patrick Burke, author of this book. Matter of fact, he's authored several books, but this one, The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes and How to Avoid Them, is what we're talking about today. Absolutely phenomenal book, folks. Really is. You can get it on Amazon, bookstores near you. Just go ahead and look up The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes. Patrick, before we get to chapter two, do you have a website associated with this book too?
Yes, right. PatrickBurke.net.
Okay, PatrickBurke.net. And by the way, that is Patrick Burke with an E at the end, so it's B-U-R-K-E. So PatrickBurke.net, N-E-T. So check that out for sure. So let's move on to chapter two, and let's talk about lifestyle businesses. I've never really heard this term, but as a coach who has coached businesses, I was telling my wife, I ran into this as a coach, but I didn't know what to call it. I didn't realize it was called a lifestyle business. Explain to people what a lifestyle business is.
Well, I guess it's, first off, it sort of defines why you're in business, right? And if it's one of those, hey, look, I had been on the corporate hamster wheel and I really didn't like, I was traveling all the time. I don't want to do that. So I decided I'm going to be a marketing consultant and I'm going to try to do it with businesses within 5-hour drive of my home. And that's fine. And it's, you know, you understand that, you know, there's a limited number of businesses there. It's going to give you the ultimate discretion about when you work and when you don't work. However, there's downsides to that. You know, perhaps there's going to be an opportunity that you can't execute on because you don't have any employees. Perhaps you get a really long assignment and, you know, you're on it 3 or 4 months and you're not doing any marketing. So as soon as that assignment's complete, then all of a sudden your pipeline's empty. And so you said, that's fine. If that's okay with you, that's a lifestyle business. You've made that determination. It doesn't have much risk because you don't have a lot of payroll. As I said in the book, you know, if your new business is a shoe shine stand, you know, that's fine. You got very little in materials costs, and but on a rainy day, you have no business. So that's the problem with that. And I guess the other, to me, if you've made that decision and that's what you've done and that's what you've built, that's fine. However, what I often see is people who have a business that really does have some significant upside, but they've treated it like an ATM and they've turned it into a lifestyle business because they've become enamored with what they can buy. And you know, instead of creating wealth, they're buying stuff and it's starving the company of the funding it needs to grow. And sometimes you tell a client that and they say, oh yeah, I know. That's not what I want to do. And it's like, well, you know, really? It's like, we can set this up so you don't have to work any harder than you're working now. Just work a little smarter, maybe take a few more risks because you're going to have to bring on some people and, you know, institute some processes. But at the end of the day, you're going to have an asset that you can sell. Maybe it's internally, maybe it's externally. In the meantime, you know, you haven't really done, you really haven't necessarily changed your lifestyle that much. So this is particularly true of businesses that you can see are scalable. And I mean, I've got a client right now that's going through this. He's a very successful computer consultant, and he's just testing out the market about moving it out of his house. You know, he's got a couple of remote employees. He could probably use a couple of employees that are, you know, sitting next to him. But, you know, it's like right now it's, you know, it's more money than he's ever made. And he's, you know, sitting, unfortunately, work for him, working 14 hours a day, making a lot of money. But, you know, it's really nothing that he could, if he got hit by a bus tomorrow, it'd be gone. There's nothing there. And young guy, plenty of time to do this. But so I just, you know, I guess the real, you know, sort of one of the subtexts of this book is don't do something. If it's really not what you want to do, don't do, it's like, it's, if you really want to have a lifestyle business, that's fine, but don't fall into something because you just didn't think it all the way through. If it's a volitional act, fine. If it's an error of omission, you know, because you didn't think it through, that's what I'm trying to help people to get past, if you will.
Well, you do talk about that. We, you know, you should kind of start with your passion.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there, you have to like what you do. I mean, it's, you know, the old story, you know, if you like what you do, you never work a day in your life. And right. I think there's a lot of truth to that. And if you started off doing what you want to do, and you can sort of build the business around your personality and what you enjoy doing, then, you know, that's great. A lot of people can't. And a lot of people, you know, particularly I have friends who work for multinational companies, and they like okay what they do, but you know, they have absolutely no say in whether they're going to China next week, right? So right. If that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen. Whether they're going to miss the kids' basketball game is, you know, sorry, that's not part of the deal, right?
Right. Yeah, you know, I think there's this balance, though, isn't there? I mean, if you are the star of your company, it can be great, but then how do you leverage that to growth? Because it doesn't work without you, and that in itself is an issue.
It is, and you know, there are certainly, you know, some businesses that are not scalable, but I don't really find that's, you know, let's just say you're a particularly talented consultant, and you're really good at marketing let's say digital marketing. And whether you know it or not, you have checklists in your head about how you do what you do. And you know, part of what I do is I do some coaching of CFOs. And, you know, I started off just sitting down with them, going through with some things I thought they should look at. And it was actually based on my book called Acceleration, which it has 20 questions. You go through much like your questions you started the show with, only they're all, you know, financial questions, and rating yourself on those. And I guess it's there's no reason why you anything that can be done and can be replicated by somebody else should be replicated by somebody else. And you should create processes around that so it's not just you, because you do have a way of doing it that somebody else may not be exactly like you,
right?
But it's going to be passable. Right. And therefore it's scalable.
Right. Yeah. And of course this just happens all the time where we see people, you know, they are it. You make a statement that, you know, at the end of the day, either somebody's going to buy your business or no one is.
That's right.
You know, I mean, that's the truth. A lot of people, by the way, I just want to thank all the people who are watching from all over, Facebook, LinkedIn, CastBox FM, from all over. Thanks for joining the show, folks. Pat got a shout out, and people are saying, "Hey, hi, Pat." And I'm like, "Well, good for you. Well, thanks for watching, and thanks for watching and listening in. We appreciate you, John, Joel, Adrian, and all the numbers of other people." Let's talk about paying yourself. I think this is a difficult thing to for entrepreneurs and business people to understand when you own your own business. How much should I pay myself? What's right? What's wrong? Because that could be a huge mistake too.
It can. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, "Boy, make sure you pay yourself first." And it's like, yeah, well, that's true. You don't want to be the last guy at the pay window on Friday. But you also, back to the lifestyle situation, right? I mean, sometimes you have to be the last guy at the pay window. And you know, I know personally, you know, I've sweated through many payrolls where weeks I didn't get paid. And it was like, okay, but that's the price I paid. I could see, I took the long view and thought, well, it's much more important that I keep these people happy. And they're not, they won't reap the rewards I reap because I'm the entrepreneur and I'm the owner and they're here performing a function. So that's fine. But I guess I see it as a couple of different ways. I mean, back to the lifestyle business. If your business is just creating enough to sort of pay you what your market value is, hey, I'm a really a great accountant. And, you know, if I was working for ABC, I'd be making $120,000 a year. And that's what my company makes every year. That's fine. You know, you're paying yourself your worth, but you're not being, the other flip side of it is you're not being paid for your risk. So you have to look at your yield from your company in two ways. It's a yield on your time. It's a yield on actually three ways, a yield on the capital you got invested. And it's a yield on the risk you take every year because, you know, whatever happens or doesn't happen, it lands on the buck does stop with you. So you got to be careful about that. And a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of businesses. It's funny when you look at a business brokerage and it's got they call it a seller's discretionary earnings. Nothing wrong with that. And a lot of businesses sell for that multiple of SDE. But one of the things, you know, our company does business valuations, among other things. And when you're looking at the value of a business, you say, okay, let's extract that owner. What is the value of that owner? Well, he's $100,000 or she's a $200,000 person. What does the company make after that? And then, you know, on a business valuation, when you do that, you really take a multiple of that number. Is in most scalable businesses, they don't really look at it as just what the owner can take out. It's what the owner can take out after he's paid himself or herself a fair salary.
Let's move to partnerships. I'm asked this really, this is chapter four. The mistake number four is partnerships. Partnerships can be great, but they seem, based on what I'm reading in your book, they can be a major problem of when or should we not.
Well, I always say partnerships work best when things are going just okay. You know, when things are really blown and going, it's usually one partner's at least idea. And it's generally true. Somebody is outshining the other person. And particularly if they got into it 50-50, there's going to be some resentment. On the other hand, if you're not doing well, you know, there's probably some sort of finger pointing and it's going to end up, you know, that also ends up being pretty fractious. It's interesting to me because in the book that I wrote called There's No Us in Business, it's all about partnering and not partnering and deciding when you should. And in that book and in this chapter, we talk about what is the gold standard for a partner. And if you've got an idea, it's your idea. And the gold standard in my estimation is a partner is somebody who has a skill that's absolutely essential to your business, absolutely essential. And you can't get that skill by money alone. The only way you can get that skill inside your business is by offering that person ownership in the business. That's fine. Then, you know, it meets the criteria. Then you can negotiate what percentage that's actually worth. But absent that, you're very careful about it. And what I find so interesting is, by and large, entrepreneurs are, you know, lone wolf type people. And but suddenly when it comes time to start the business, they want to hunt in a pack. And it's like, whoa, you know, one of the reasons you didn't get along at wherever you were was you were kind of the guy, kind of the outcast or the lone wolf that was looking at things differently. And so I got some great advice from my older brother, who was my mentor. And I was about to add on a partner. And he said, you don't even know what you have yet. Why on earth would you bring a partner in now? You couldn't even value what it was, could you? Right. And it was like, but, you know, what if she leaves? It's like, well, that's, you know, it's not a gun to your head situation. So, you know, you have to be careful about that. And and she didn't possess a skill that I couldn't buy somewhere else. So, you know, sometimes it's uncomfortable, but that's life, right?
Yeah, well, you have a great quote. It says, business isn't doubles tennis. You don't immediately begin looking for a playing partner. It's more,
but I tell you what, that's what people do. It's much more like a triathlon.
Right.
You're doing all the parts, generally everything in the beginning, right? You might have a coach or a bike mechanic, but you're the one on the bike, running it in the water. So, it's not synchronized swimming. Let's go, right?
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I don't want people to gloss over your gold standard, because I think it is absolutely true, and that is they have to possess that skill that is absolutely critical to the success of the business.
Right.
Right, and because, I think you told, I think it's here, yeah, it's here, that you tell the story that somebody wanted to be a partner. I think she wanted to be a partner in your business, but what she really didn't really want to be a partner, she just wanted to be part of the equity.
Right. And that's, I think, it's interesting how people look at that. I mean, my dad used to have a saying that if somebody was cheap, that he threw nickels around like sewer lids, so very careful with his money. And that's how I look at equity. That should be thrown around like sewer lids and not nickels. But it's like I say in the book, and I've told people this many times, if you don't think the equity in your business, is going to be your most valuable asset, then don't start the business.
Right.
And so you should be guarding it very, very carefully and issuing new shares to people only as 100% as needed. And Jay, honestly, most of the time, the person on the other side isn't that interested in equity. They're interested in money. And if you can give them some sort of long-term incentive plan, whether, a phantom stock plan, something like that, that they can participate in. Frankly, when somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm been offered this equity in this new business, and, I can get 5% of the deal, and you say, how can you turn that into money and win?
Right.
Well, the company's got a right of first refusal. And I say, well, right of first refusal doesn't mean anything to you. You can't take down to the butcher shop and swap it for pork chop. So, but usually a phantom equity plan has some sort of a term to it. It might be funded by life insurance, and it actually, you can demand the money from the company, which is what a lot of people want.
Right. You talk about in the partner, there's a threshold question that's compatibility. And you say, and I'm going to quote you here, your partner needs to match your passion for the business and, like you, be committed to continually upgrading his or her skills. To me, that just seems like a no-brainer, but so often we're not paying attention to that aspect of it.
No, you're really not. And I guess there's, and you don't know where you're going to end up. You could start off with the perfect partner who really had a skill, but you don't know where you're going to end up. I always tell people, take the DISC profile, something like that, so you know what to expect in dealing with your partner. I recently had a situation where a successful business and the partners were 50-50, but the output was more like 70-30. And the 50-50, the person who was producing the 70 was like, hey, I had this happen. And we went back and we looked at their DISC profiles, and they looked exactly alike. Only, one looked like Michael Jordan's hand and the other one looked like Mother Teresa's hand. So all the fingers were the same, in the same proportion,
sure.
Just his was much stronger. So his drive was off the charts. And so he's been dedicated to, expanding his business knowledge, meeting more people, creating more centers of influence, and just, being a kind of a marketing juggernaut. And the other person was okay. And he was okay in the beginning, but just not keeping up. Right. And
right.
So there's a way, so long as you, back to, a book I read years ago called Fierce Conversations. Sometimes you just got to sit down with your partner and say, I know we started off looking at it this way, but it really hasn't ended up that way. So instead of, going different directions or new directions, let's go together, but let's do it this way. And let's rejigger those equity numbers. Very tough, very tough conversation, but better that than splitting up in general.
Right. You talk about in partner moral character is important, but then you say something that I think is really interesting. And I think this is a great, a great way to evaluate this if partnership is right. You say, if you wouldn't be proud to have your potential partner's name next to yours on a sign swinging in front of your business, you've made a poor choice.
No question about it. I mean, if you don't feel good about it in the beginning, they're not going to change because they're your partner. You know, if they weren't trustworthy and honest and of the highest moral integrity, they're not going to change just because that's you. Frankly, what's most likely going to happen is they're going to take advantage of you. So you know, just be very, very careful with that. And I've seen it over and over. And I've in my own business life, I've partnered with people who, they weren't bad people. They just weren't hardworking, and they didn't do what they said they were going to do, and didn't do it when they were going to do it. And they, you know, kind of vanished for long periods of time. And it was like, I should have known, you know, they weren't going to change their stripes just because they were hanging around with me. And that, it didn't work out. Several of those didn't work out, honestly, which is sort of the genesis of the book, frankly.
Yeah. You know, I think that to me, that is a great evaluation. I just love that. If somebody wants to partner with you and you can't put their name next to your name on the sign, that's all that it says. Cause I have to tell you that to me, I just found that I was like, going, yeah. I was literally going through people in my head, you know, if I were to partner with somebody, who could I partner with? And would I be proud to put their name on the sign, or would I be a little embarrassed about?
Well, it's funny, when I first, my partner, Gene Schindler, we've been partners now for about 18 years. And when I first made him a name partner, and I wrote an article in our newsletter, and I said, you know, I'm proud to have his name next to mine on our sign that does swing in front of our accounting firm here. Mm. And one of my Australian clients said back, he said, that was a great comment. Good on you, mate. And I always remember that. He was moved by that. So thank you for also being moved by it, because I think it is a high standard, but it is the standard.
Totally agree. Speaking of high standards, this book is a high standard. It's the 10 biggest business mistakes and how to avoid them. You're listening to Patrick Burke right here on A New Direction. Hey, listen, Epic Physical Therapy offers the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the Alter G anti-gravity treadmill, Normatec compression sleeves, Game Ready. That's just a few. They are trained and certified in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments available. Things like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, that's just a few. Professional athletes go to see them for a reason, and they will see you too. Why? Because when you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results, that's where you start. You start at epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. You know what? For over 35 years, Linda Kraft and Team Realtors has been helping people all over the world. They start with her. Do you know why they start with her? Because they know the results that they're going to get. Not only that, they know the customer experience and the customer care they're going to get. They know that Linda Kraft and her team are going to do whatever it takes to do to make sure that they can help you find your dream home or sell your home to find your next dream. So listen, when you're ready to buy or sell your next home, start with Linda Kraft at Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Patrick Burke and his book, The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes. I always ask this at this point in the show, are you enjoying your time with me here on the show today?
Very much, Jay. Thank you.
That's awesome.
I like getting a chance to talk. You know, it's not often accountants get a chance to talk, so this is true.
I'm going to give you more chances to talk, Patrick.
Oh, great.
I promise.
I always tell people, if you're at a cocktail party and you meet somebody that you don't want to talk to, and they ask what you do, you say, well, I'm an accountant, and that usually gets the back of their head. But if you want to talk to them, I always say, I'm a financial agriculturalist. And they say, what do you do? And it's like, I help grow businesses. And that'll actually start a conversation.
Right,
so
right.
That's it works well.
Good for you. Yeah. By the way, I will have links back to Patrick on the blog post that's associated with the show. So feel free to hit him up because he's a wealth of information. Matter of fact, we skipped over a chapter about professionals. And I did that kind of intentionally just because he is a professional, but it's not that. I did that because I just felt like there's just certain things that the audience wants to hear. And so, but he talks about the importance of a great professional, and he certainly is one of those. that you want to contact and hit up when you're ready to start your business. Mistake number five is the wrong team. You say, and I quote, the vast majority of business owners hire too fast and fire too slow. They just don't have the sixth sense necessary to pick great team members. Infallibility complex is a common affliction among the newly successful. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, back to the three-legged stool, right? I mean, it's sales, production, administration. And frankly, I think that there's aspects, you know, like I think recruiting is a sales process, but interviewing and onboarding and acculturalizing somebody is really an administrative process. So in general, I find that the entrepreneurs themselves are not very good at the process. I'm particularly bad at interviewing people because if I think they're in any way viable, I'm selling. And if they're uncomfortable, I'm trying to make them at ease. And at the end, I don't really know if they'd be a good employee or not. So, only thing I generally find out is, hey, you know, could I get along with that person? But I don't necessarily walk out of the meeting as if somebody said, you know, is that a definitely a successful person? You know, it's not like an NFL combine. I don't know how fast they ran the 40. I don't know what their vertical lead. I just don't know. I mean, I didn't do that part of it. So somebody else, I have to outsource that. And I think because entrepreneurs have a tremendous confidence in their own gut, and they tend to make decisions. Hey, I think that person's going to work out fine. They don't do background checks. They don't do inventories. They don't necessarily figure out whether or not they are a cultural fit. And you know, one of the things that I point out in the book is most people don't fail at the job because they didn't have the resume skills. They didn't win or work in the job because they didn't fit in with the culture. So, and frankly, most small businesses are very poor at onboarding. What's actually expected of us here? And how do we handle this situation? And what does a typical client look like? And why does a typical client come to you? If they can't answer that before they walk in the door, then you've made a giant mistake, right? Mm. But most people don't. You know, they sort of rely on, you know, hey, they'll sort of figure that out walking down the halls and dealing with people. It's like, oh, why would you do that? That's crazy. But that's what happens. Particularly if you're a business, I'd say under 100 people, that's what's happening.
You say something about entrepreneurs and hiring, and I'm going to read you again the quote that you made because I just think it's just so good. You said most entrepreneurs are imbued with a super strong work ethic and boundless optimism. They truly believe they can transform employees, even those with below average skills and drive, into valuable players through their excellent example and the sheer force of their iron will. And here's the ending statement that you make. This is patently not true.
Yeah. I know somewhere in that part of the chapter, I talk about Pete Rose. And, you know, Pete Rose, if you're a Cincinnati Reds fan, you know, actually, the street down the block from me is Pete Rose Way. So you know, that was, I think, one of the only streets named after a living person in Cincinnati, if not the only one. And he thought, you know, he ran to first when he got a walk, and he didn't understand why everybody didn't out-hustle. If you played for him, you know, you ran to first when you got a walk, and you dove into the base, you went for the extra base. If you didn't end the game with your uniform full of grass and mud, then you didn't play hard enough. So he just couldn't he couldn't figure out why people weren't like him. And it was like, well, you know, you had 4,200 hits. So there's nobody like you. So it just wasn't going to work. And that's why he wasn't a good manager. He couldn't take, number one, I don't know if you can ever take an average person and turn him into a great one, but you can turn him into somebody that works. But he couldn't do that because he couldn't see past they weren't putting out the effort. So, not every entrepreneur is quite as boundless in their energy as Pete Rose, but wow, a lot of them are. I'd say at least 60% would fall into the Pete Rose category.
Right. Yeah. You talk about, well, Pete Rose is a unique player.
Yeah. No question.
Right. And this is the problem sometimes with unique players. people who possess certain skills and are enviable because of what they do and how they play the game or in business or that matter, that doesn't mean that they can translate that into other people.
Generally, they can't. I mean, they can set the standard, but let somebody else, you know, if the success is up here, somebody else has to build the ladder because, you know, they did it all themselves and they just don't see why it would take so long or why you'd need so much instruction to get from here to there. It's kind of endemic to that personality, to be honest with you. And it's very, 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 very few entrepreneurs are good at that part of the business.
Well, and I think what you try to do in this chapter is you try to tell us to simplify it down and be more logical in the approach. And you say step one in the entire process is make sure you have a really thorough job description.
And that's the problem. A lot of people sort of, they... it kind of reminds me back to the football analogy. You know, it sort of draft the best athlete, and then we'll figure out where to put them. It's like, no. You know, if you need an interior lineman, you know, is it a guard or is it a tackle? What is it you need? And just let's write out the job description, then make sure the person fits that. And because inevitably what happens is they meet somebody they like, and it's like, well, you know, maybe – he hasn't been a sales manager before, or she hasn't been a digital marketing person before, but we can teach her that. And you think, no, that's not how you would tell your client to run his business. Right. Why would you do that yourself? It's hubris, frankly. You know, hey, I can do anything I want. And I think I put this in the book. I mean, I had a friend of mine who was an HR guy, and he said, you know, if somebody's personality is north, that's his real personality. You can get northeast or northwest. You're not going to get south.
Right.
So whatever, you just forget it. It's just not going to happen. You're just not that powerful.
Right. I think that's an interesting analogy. Use that sports football analogy, you know, that, you know, you just don't hire the best athlete and we'll find a place to put him, because I have said this consistently that, you know, a defensive end is 6'6" and 265 pounds may be your best athlete, but you're not going to put him at slot receiver.
Right. Yeah, he's not Wes Welker. He's not
going to
work.
It doesn't work. And which is kind of interesting. I also thought that you said something here that was kind of interesting here as well. You did use the sports analogy that about when it comes to hiring, that there has to be some sense of turnover when it comes to hiring. Like there's this.
There does, and I think that. It's funny. I have a client looking at buying a factory in Italy, and one of my college roommates has been in the shoe manufacturing business almost his whole career. So I knew I'd never been in that. And so I called him, actually it was 2 days ago. And I said, what do you think about this? And he knew the factory and he was like, don't, you know, in Italy, when you buy the factory, you have hired everybody in that factory for life. And so you're responsible for them and their families. So there's no, it's not like here where, you know, you downsize, you right size, that doesn't happen. And it's not that bad in entrepreneurial run companies, but it does become, particularly with smaller companies, it becomes almost familial, and we can't let old Ed go because where's he going to go from here? And it's,
right.
You know, frankly, it's been my experience when somebody's not working out and you sit down with them and say, hey, look, you know, we got a part company. Here's what I suggest you do with your life, and I'll help you do that. This isn't your future. Generally, they're relieved.
It's right.
Like, you know, I knew it, and I was kind of waiting for you to say it. But the other thing I always tell people is you're not enemies. That person may have worked for you for 10 years and right. Progressed to a certain point, and he or she is going to be a great employee someplace else. It's just not here. So I always say stay as long as you need. Within reason, and I'll help you find the next position. You know, we're friends, but it's okay that it didn't work out here. It's not personal.
Right.
Tough to say, tough to do, but it's true.
All right. My wife has this statement she gave me. She goes, you got to Q-tip it, right? Quit taking it personally.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You have to
Q-tip
it. Mistake number 6, think big. And you open up with a quote from Johann Wolfgang von Goethe is said to have written, dream no small dreams, for they have no power to move the hearts of men. What are you talking about when you mean think big as a mistake?
It's funny. I can't think of a successful entrepreneur that got into I shouldn't say, a lot of successful entrepreneurs don't end up with big, big businesses. They're successful because it got as big as they wanted it to be. But on the other hand, if to take something to its sort of logical size, you have to dream way outside the margins of your own sort of past experience. And I always admire people who can continuously grow businesses, even though they're walking every day into the door of the biggest business they ever ran. So, but they can still see, and they still have vision down the road. And that's very, very unusual to be thinking big all the time. Most people, you know, sort of circumscribe their dream by, you know, what they've seen over here, or what their, you know, their best friend did, or their parents did, or what they think the limit of their growth is based on what their bankers are saying.
Yeah, I thinking big is huge. We don't think big enough. And even when we think we're thinking big, we're not thinking probably big enough, are we?
That's true. No, I think there's so many ways to like right now we're looking at buying a rural CPA firm. And we've never done that before. And it's an hour and a half from us. It's a very nice firm. They got a nice group of clients, but they're having a hard time. They can't find people to want to work in this little town. So it's like, well, all we need is a couple of people, and we can do all the work from here. You know, it can be done remotely. But they didn't think that through. They didn't have an office in Cincinnati. You know, they're not paperless. So they're sort of caught in that old paradigm of, we can't find somebody to walk in the door here and do it every day, then we can't get it done. It's like, well, no, it can be done. You know, we got a number of employees that, you know, we never see. They just work from home, which is fine.
Patrick, we've been on an hour.
Wow. It's been fun.
It's been a blast. I've really, really enjoyed it. Patrick, if you could leave quickly the listener with a new direction based on your book, The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes, what would that be?
Let's talk about this. Don't think small. I mean, there's so many more things you can do if you're willing to sort of look outside of your comfort zone. And I think you'd be surprised at how far you can go, even with the financing you have and the people you have, if you think about what it is that you're best at and who are the customers that you really want to, that you service best, and then keep finding people like that. And I think it's funny, once you start thinking that way, you'll start attracting, you know, your centers of influence will start referring you to other people who are like that. And whatever your business is, there's, as long as you got a powerful product or service, you know, find the people who want that and then cater to them, not everybody.
That's awesome. His name is Patrick Burke. The book is entitled The 10 Biggest Business Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. Find it everywhere that you get where books are sold. Folks, that's the show. You know what? Here's the deal. You are in complete control of your attitude and your effort at all times, regardless of the circumstances around you. So take advantage of that, because it's your attitude and it's your effort. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest, with another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to you every week, ciao, everyone.
Can't find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength, don't worry anymore. A new direction. Yeah, a new direction.